Howdy, this evening we start tape number 15. We're going to title this week's tape, Making the Right Moves. Because very often parents are confronted with very tough decisions to be strict or to be lenient, to give or to take, to push or to pull. And it's often difficult to decide when to do what. Now we know that most children need a combination of both. A combination of guidelines and rules and leeway. It's a mistake that some people make when they think that children are happier the more lenient the parents are with them. That's not so. One of the things that teenagers need for their emotional well-being and for their own personal happiness, and it's something that the teenagers themselves recognize, is that they need rules. They don't want to be free and hefker. Now, sometimes they may make noises as if they do want to be hefker, and they may tell you that that's what they want, but it's not so. It's sort of a game that they play, very much like negotiating in business. It's a very strange thing, and I never really understood it because I'm not a businessman, that if somebody comes to me to buy my car, and there's a sign on the car that says $2,000, he'll come to me and say, okay, I'll give you $750 for it. Now, I'm not going to take his offer. And what I'm supposed to do is say, all right, I asked $2,000, you offering $750, I'll take $1,500 for it. And then he's supposed to say, no, all right, we'll make it $1,000. And we're supposed to play this social game, so on and so forth, until we come to some sort of conclusion. Why he can't just tell me what he wants to pay for it, what he thinks it's worth, and why I can't just tell him what I want for this car. Well, that's the way human beings work. In all of nature, we find all sorts of strange mannerisms and behavior among animals, and this is one of the strange mannerisms among human beings, that I will tell you that I want something even though I know for a fact that I don't want it. I expect you to refuse, although I make believe that you may accept. And it becomes a game. With teenagers, it's like that as well. Teenagers want rules and they need rules. It's just part of the negotiation, so to speak, where they'll say, I want to be hefker. Now they know they don't want to be hefker. They don't expect you to say yes, but it's part of the negotiation. It could be compared to a child in a dark room. Kid wakes up and he's in a dark room. They're scared. They're frightened. They don't know where they are or what to expect. So they start walking around slowly and trying to feel around. If they go too far and don't feel any walls, it gets very scary. They need those walls in order to feel safe in that room. If, on the other hand, as soon as they reach out, they'll feel the wall there, they'll feel boxed in and scared also. This is the way teenagers are. They're like people in the dark. They are confused. They are half children, half adults. We mentioned once over here that even al pi halacha, that's the case. Because we know that a child under 13 is considered a katan, or a girl under 12, and not responsible for their actions. An adult over 20 and above, is considered what we call a bar einshin, which means that they're going to be punished and responsible for all actions. Between the age of 13 and 20, which by total coincidence, quote-unquote, are the exact teenage years, the halacha is that Bezdin, on this world, considers them as an adult, but Hashem, regarding einshin, punishments that come b'day shemayim, considers him like a child, and he's not responsible. Now isn't that funny? A child 20 and above is considered a total adult. The child under 13, meaning 12 and under, is considered a total child. From 13 to 19 inclusive, exactly the teenage years, hal pi halacha is considered half-half. Now if as a parent of a teenager you think this is confusing, just imagine being in the teenager's skin himself. And therefore, it's like a teenager wakes up and he's in this dark room. There are no walls there. He's scared. He doesn't know how far he can go without falling off the edge. He doesn't know how far he can go without hurting himself. He needs those walls in order to feel safe in his world. Those walls are the rules. Those walls are the limitations that parents put on them, and society puts on them, and the Torah puts on them, and their school puts on them. However, if the walls are too close, then they also feel scared, claustrophobic. It's a different type of fear, but neither is good. So the teenagers do need those rules, and they themselves know it. They themselves want it. They may play this teenager/adult game where they'll say they don't want rules, but that's the same as buying a used car, and you should understand their offer or their proposition of being hefker the same way you would accept an offer of somebody to buy your $2,000 car for $750. You know it's not serious. They're not serious either. But the question is where to put those walls. Where to put them, how far is too far, and how close is too close. And that's going to be the subject of this evening's talk. Now, of course, we could talk about this for any number of tapes, and we know this is number 16 in a series of 1,000, which will, Bezos Hashem, be going on for a long time. And if we wanted to exhaust this topic, we could spend all 1,000 or all 984 tapes left on this topic itself. So we're only going to scratch the surface, but I'm going to start with the biggest chiddush. It's something that you probably have never heard before, but it's 100% necessary for us to understand if we're going to have any clue as to where to put those walls. And that is this. We have to understand that nowadays our children live in a different planet than we do. When we were children, we spoke about what we used to call the generation gap between adolescents and adults. That's nothing compared to the gap between adolescents and adults today. And when I say between adolescents and adults, I don't mean between the adolescents themselves and the adults themselves. What I mean is the world that the adolescents are growing up in as opposed to the world that the adults live in. There's an illusion that fools us about this. When we were children, many of our parents were European. Even the ones that weren't European grew up in a different neighborhood, even if it was the same neighborhood, it wasn't the same neighborhood. It may have been the same piece of land, the same streets, but it wasn't the same as it was when we were kids. Nowadays, parents are younger. Parents grew up in the same streets, in the same blocks, went to the same yeshivas as their children are going to. And therefore, we are clouded by an illusion that we understand how our children are growing up. I grew up in this neighborhood here, and I went to the same yeshivas in the same places that the high school children are going to today. Shopped in the same stores, more or less. Different prices, but the same stores. I took the same buses, and I walked the same streets. But it's an illusion, it's a sham. Chalila v'chalila, I should think that it's the same world that it used to be 20, 25, 30 years ago. It's not. Not at all. We were kids in yeshiva. Our rebbeim were not happy if we were listening to the music on the radio. Okay. And so, now you grow up and perhaps you're not happy if your children listen to the music on the radio. And of course, you expect to be told that it's worse than it used to be, because it always gets worse. It's more than that. It's not the same planet. If a child listens to music on the radio today, he gets an education that you shouldn't know from. You have no idea. I'm telling you this, it's not one drop of an exaggeration. We have no idea in our wildest dreams how destructive and how bad the secular music has gotten in the last generation. And in our wildest imagination, it will be impossible for us to understand that this could take place unless you really go out and see. And I recommend that, I really do. For all parents that want to see what's going on, and I'll tell you it's necessary, you have to go out and see the world that your children live in. Go into a record store one day. Just take a look at the titles of the songs. It will make your hair stand on edge. And the content makes the titles look like the table of contents in a Musar Sefer. We have no idea. And our children have access to this by turning on the radio. That's all. We're not even talking about a television. Turning on the radio. And which child nowadays, even in the most frum home, does not have a Walkman? And which Walkman does not have a radio attached to it? Such easy access. And you know what's worse? We understand how shocking this stuff is because we can contrast it to what we were used to experiencing when we were children. The problem is, to compound the problem, that our children, this is their first exposure to secular music. There's nothing that they have to contrast this with. This is it. This is what there is. We have a background of 30, 40 years of living in a relatively, and I stress the word relatively, normal world, so that we are able to perceive what's happening. Our children are growing up on this end of the historical social sliding pond, all the way in the end, and they think that this is normal. Everybody in this world wants to be frum but normal. Everybody. It doesn't matter if you're Satma Chassid, or if you learned in YU, or if you're anywhere. Everybody wants to be frum but normal. Now, no child is going to be so foolish as to think that from the television, from the radio, and from the newspapers, and from society, they're going to teach you what frum is. They're not even going to think that it'll teach you what morality is, because that they understand, and our yeshiva system is sufficient to impress upon our children that they're not going to find morals out there. But what normal is, that's the problem. Everybody wants to be frum but normal. What's normal? The truth of the matter is there is no normal. There's no definition. It's all relative. When the American soldiers were in the Gulf War, so they met with their Arab teammates, and the Arabs thought the Americans were crazy, and the Americans thought the Arabs were crazy. And everybody thought that the other person was abnormal. They weren't normal, not normal people. The Arabs looked at the Americans as the most promiscuous, low creatures that they've ever met. And the Americans looked at the Arabs as not normal. Abnormal, fundamentalist extremists. The truth is there's no such thing as normal. It's all a relative term that society defines. And today society is defining for our children what normal is. They'll want to be frum, but normal. What was normal 20 years ago is not normal now. What's normal now is a pachad. Comic books that are sold to 10-year-olds in the store. I want to tell you a story that I know of a very fine younger man, a wealthy man, a big bal tzedakah that lives in New Jersey, whose father used to be a balabas of mine. And when this younger man was a boy in yeshiva, he had a problem learning how to read. It just wasn't going. And father asked the menahel, this was in a Hasidic yeshiva, what he should do with his kid, who just isn't picking up the learning. And the menahel, whose name, by the way, was Rabbi Nosson Sherman, told this man, let him read comic books. He did, and the kid learned how to read from that. This man told me himself. The same comic books that when we were little kids, the silly superhero titles that we look at as harmless nonsense, today, you have no idea of what the content of those things are. Homosexual heroes, blatant and explicit, social issues, catching AIDS. And it doesn't leave anything to the imaginations how they contracted these diseases. These are what the storylines contain. You don't have to take my word for it. I'm not asking you to go to somewhere in Manhattan in some corner and find out. Go to any Barnes & Noble bookstore. Go to any candy shop where your children shop to buy these, what we used to consider little shtus and nothings. And you'll see this is what it is. When we were kids, just look at it this way. When we were kids and the teacher told us to do a social studies report in fourth grade, to go to the front page of the New York Times and bring something in, and they were very careful to mention the New York Times, so Chalila, somebody shouldn't pick up the New York Post or anything, right? And we had a social studies issue. What was it? The Vietnam War, or John F. Kennedy, or Cuba, or Castro, or whatever. Now, a child will pick up a Supreme Court debate over the qualifications of a particular Supreme Court candidate. What is the tzad to disqualify the candidate? Some sexual indiscretions. This is social studies. We have to understand this is not some sleazy piece of news that the newspapers put in for sensationalism, for shock effect. That's not, this is mainstream social studies. This is government studies. Nowadays, that's what it is. Period. Take the front cover in Time magazine. What could be more straight-laced than Time magazine? You'll find an O.J. Simpson. You'll find all sorts of things like this. And we understand, because we grew up with 20 years of the New York Times, and we understand that, okay, this is crazy, it used to be normal. We don't understand, by our kids, Stam, New York Times, this is what it is. They didn't have those 20 previous years that we had. They're growing up, this is it. This is social studies. This is normal. This is history. This is straight-laced journalism. This is current events. They are growing up with this. We have to get it out of our heads that our children live in the same world that we live. Even though the New York Times is the same paper, and Spider-Man is the same title, and the grocery store is the same on the same street corner, it's a different world. It's a totally different world. And because you grew up, yeah, Nishkefelach, newspapers in the house, means nothing. You have to reassess on your own what you want your children to be exposed to and how much you want them sheltered, not based upon the standards that you were brought up with, because those standards are fossilized, they're no longer relevant, they're not nageya anymore. They're inapplicable. Based upon the new, actual, realistic applications of those morals that we learned that are relevant nowadays. And it's so hard for parents to understand this because there's such an illusion. We think, yeah, it got a little worse, a little better, whatever. It's not the same planet. The Eitzah is for you to bear this in mind and reassess objectively and from scratch the amount of exposure to society that you want your children to have. Now, I'm not telling you what it should be, but what I am telling you clearly is that it must be reassessed, and you can't use the standards that you were brought up with, because you were brought up on a different planet. Our parents that came from Europe certainly understood that America, the rules of society changed. We, in the same, what is this, Ocean Avenue and Avenue O, 20 years ago was not the same Ocean Avenue and Avenue O that it is today. It's not the same. We should imagine ourselves as if, not that we came from Europe, a different continent, that we dropped from the planet Pluto over here to Earth to encounter strange, bizarre, and alien society that we are forced to bring up our children within. It's a different mindset, a different attitude. And if you take it from there, you more effectively be able to teach your children to deal with society. So first thing, we shouldn't be fooled. Step two, along these lines. We've grown up with certain ideas of what's considered kosher in terms of societal involvement, entertainment, leisure, and what's considered treif. Very often, those standards no longer apply, and they're topsy-turvy. The problem is that our children, who are intelligent people, sometimes grow up and they see that we just don't know what we're talking about. I give you an example. This evening, for the first time in a very, very long time, I was in one of the very nice, family-oriented, clean-cut, so-called, relatively yeshivish pizza stores on Avenue J. Okay? Now, this is the same pizza store. Remember when I was in Chaim Berlin, they charged for two slices and a small Coke $1. Okay? Now it's more than triple that. Same store, same owners, the same guy got a little older. And he's the same guy behind the counter. It may have moved. Used to be on Coney Island Avenue. Same neighborhood, same people behind the same store. You go upstairs, where there are additional seating spaces, and you read, and I want you to do this, because we have no idea. You read on the wall, a whole wall, as big as this wall over here, full of graffiti, the likes of which you'd be shocked if you'd see it in a Times Square men's room. I'm not exaggerating. Not in the slightest. Except the names that you find over there are names of Jewish kids. Names like Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Yosef, David, and Shlomo. That live right here in the neighborhood. And when we send our children to eat, they are nice little naive 12-year-olds. We say, where are you going? And in your mind you know that you're a very cautious parent and that you're very in tune with what's happening. Cholila, you wouldn't want your child to be exposed to something that you wouldn't want him to be exposed to. And he says, I'm going to this and this pizza store. And you breathe a sigh of relief and you say, Baruch Hashem. He could have gone to the one down the next block, which of course is much worse. And you don't know that he comes back with a PhD in schmutz. I'm talking about a place where Rebbeya meet. I've seen Choshev a Yidden there with their wives. They don't go upstairs. I'm not kashrus. I have no clue. I don't know what's going on in this neighborhood. It's not. You know, I'm not talking about that. But kids come out Rachman Litzlan with an education from this place. Oh, please, do not take my word for it. Go there. Go there and see for yourselves. Ein adoim shmiya l'ri'iya. What picture is worth a thousand words. Go there and see. On the other hand, we know that it would be chalil, the worst thing in the world for our children to, on a Matzah Shabbos or on a weeknight even, to go to the local billiards hall. We know that billiards hall is full of lowlifes. People are probably laying drunk and they smoke and there's stomach drugs there and the biggest the lowest element of society frequent there, and the place probably smells, and how could a human being even walk into such a place? You tell this to your child, and most yeshivas, or many yeshivas, have this standard. And they'll tell the kids, here you can go, and here you can't go. And the kid goes into one of these pool halls, depends which one, and they see a nice, clean place, the graffiti that you'll find in the yeshivish pizza store, will never be allowed. Nothing at all close to that will you find in this billiards hall. Oh, no alcoholic beverages allowed. If there's a fight or anything like that, they're immediately thrown out and never allowed in again. We send our children to baseball games, either rightly or wrongly. And the atmosphere in a baseball game where you have the guy with the pot belly and the beer in front of you is a lot worse than the atmosphere here. I'm not saying you should let your kids go there, but I'm saying that whatever standards you have should be consistent and logical. And the fact is, when we grew up, that's the way it was, Taka. When we grew up, it was this way. But nowadays, things changed. And it could be a lot worse for a child to go to this nice yeshivish place where the yeshivas are very happy where they go than to a place where a girl in Beis Yaakov would be immediately thrown out if she would be caught within Dalet Amos of. I'm not saying either place is somewhere, you know, where the Chafetz Chaim would like to spend his leisure time. But what I am saying, if you have a child and you're telling them this place yes and this place no, and the child goes there and he reads the wall and this place they go, and he sneaks over there one night and he sees that it's fine, this child's going to grow up confused. This child's not going to understand, and he's going to start developing a serious lack of respect for the standards that authority figures are setting for him. It's one out of a thousand. We have to understand that, yes, we have to make rules for our children. And we have to understand that to a certain extent we have to give them leeway. But before you build that wall, wherever you decide to build it, you better get a good blueprint of that room. Not the way it was 20 years ago, but the way it is today. So that in the safe areas, you don't lock in the kid, and on the other hand, you give him a free rein, a one-way trip towards oblivion. There's so many students, so many children, that have been corrupted and ruined in such kosher places. I'll tell you an interesting thing. I read this from Rav Avigdor Miller. He writes about how to choose a masifta for your children. He writes in one of his svarim that there are very many pupils, this is a lashon, who are corrupted by the secular, non-observant English teachers in the masiftas. It's a bold statement to make, but it's true. He says, make sure the English teachers in the masiftas are observant Jews where your children go. Now, it's not always easy to find that. I know that because in certain yeshivas where I've mentioned it, they said it's hard to get from people in the English department. When I went to Masifta, I want you to know, we had some very frum people, some people who are now in the Hebrew department of other yeshivas, and we had some people who were koifrim, and some people who mamash apikarsim. And when I think back, I want you to know, that nobody leaves these people, the classroom of these people, without an effect. I remember now, with the benefit of hindsight, when I was a kid, things I didn't notice. Things that were taught to us, things that were told to us, that should not have been. And that's within the four walls of the yeshiva. I mean, nowadays, how do people choose yeshivas? I was talking to, in the pizza store, I met these kids, that's why I was there. And this 12-year-old girl's in the 8th grade is telling me, on what basis is she choosing a high school for herself? And she mentioned that her choice is between two schools, and it was very strange that she said these two schools because they're on two opposite ends of the spectrum. You know what her criteria were? These don't have school on Sunday. Schools that have school on Sunday, not interested. The ones that don't have school on Sunday is fine. That's it. That was criteria number one. Everything else is second or third or fourth on a list. And if a kid says, Mommy, I want to go to this school, I want to go to this school, what are you going to tell her? Sometimes you tell her no, but if the kid insists, what are you going to say? And if it's a boy, I'll show you in Shulchan Aruch where it says that he has a right to pick his yeshiva over his parents' wishes. Well, if you want, you can try to slug him up. I told you the story once that Reb Tuvia Goldstein told me when they tried something like this in Baranovich Yeshiva with Reb Elchanan. They went to Reb Elchanan and they were upset with the curriculum that Reb Elchanan had chosen for them. And they went to Reb Elchanan and they said, we want you to change it, and he said, no. So they told Reb Elchanan, it says in the Gemara that the students have a right to learn whatever they want. This Reb Tuvia Goldstein told me he was one of these students that approached Reb Elchanan with this Taina. Reb Elchanan said, yes, the students have a right to learn whatever they want, but that's only if they know what they want. If they think they know what they want, but they really don't, They have no choice. So you can tell your son whatever you want when he picks his yeshiva based upon the how much recess they give. But our assessment of what we allow for our children or we don't allow for our children has to be based upon actual knowledge of the facts. And very often, very well-meaning parents and very experienced and educated parents, knowledgeable parents, are way, way off base when they make their standards because they just don't know what's flying anymore. The first lesson is tzu'u ura'u. Go out and learn about the world that your child is living in. And go out and see what you're talking about. Don't you know that there was a menahel in one of the Beis Yankas? He told me this, a man with a moderately long white beard, once walked up to one of these pool halls. And he stood there by the door with his arms crossed, because he wanted to see what it was all about. He heard some of his students frequent the place. He wanted to know what's going on. And the Italian guy, Gino, that works behind the counter, came to him and says, "Are you here to make trouble?" So, in the pizza store, by the way, they'd never come over to anybody, "You're here to make trouble." Over there, you know, they run a more clean-cut ship. So, he said, "No, I just heard that my students are here and I wanted to see what it was all about." And he said, "Fine." Now, this man did something very good. He wanted to make an intelligent and informed decision regarding the chinuch of his talmidos. And he wanted to be able to say with confidence that this is either right or this is either wrong. And if you don't know what you're talking about, you can't say anything. So the first thing is, and I want you to know we've said it here a number of times in a number of different ways, but here we're mentioning it regarding your decision about where to put those walls in the dark room that your adolescent is growing up in. The first step in where to put those walls is to know the outlay of the room. A good picture of that room before you decide to put up any walls and where you put them up. Because the truth is that, yes, it's possible for parents to be too strict, it's possible for parents to be too liberal, but that is both of the above are a relatively microscopic problem compared to a parent being inconsistent. A parent's rules contradicting each other. A parent's rules being incomprehensible, cloudy, blurry, colliding with each other, a stira mine ube in the mind of the child. Once that happens, you stand no chance. There are parents that are overly strict, Baruch Hashem. There are parents that are overly liberal, Baruch Hashem. But parents whose standards contradict each other, they stand almost no chance. Need a ness to get out of that one. Take a risk, a calculated risk of being either too strict or being either too liberal, if by doing so you're going to be more consistent and more understandable. Kids can understand parents that are very strict. Very strict is very careful. Not so strict is more liberal. They want to let the children learn on their own. Of course there's such a thing as too extreme on both sides, but something the children can understand. And it's a mistake, if it is a mistake, that a child can absorb. A child will understand, it's understandable. A child will not disrespect the parent's word. If parents contradict themselves, if they're inconsistent, then it's all over. They may as well close up shop. Put the kids up for adoption. It's not going to work. Consistency is the first thing. And the only way you can be consistent nowadays is to go out there and find out what's doing. First-hand information, that's what you need. That's step one. Step two is that not only do you need an education about what's going on out there, but you need an education as to what's going on inside your child. Every child is different. The system that exists nowadays, a societal system, is such that certain children, certain adults, are branded successes, and certain adults are branded failures. If a child grows up to be a doctor or a lawyer, a successful man. We're talking about B'nai Torah from people. A child grows up to be a garbage collector, he's a failure. Garbage collector. You know, every time your child doesn't pay, the child doesn't pay attention to the homework, or if you're a teacher in a classroom and you see a kid dreaming, you say, you're going to grow up to be a garbage collector. I want you to know, and this is a subject for a future tape in and of itself, it's a terrible thing. Kadosh Baruch Hu created garbage that needs to be collected. I want you to know that Rashi in Masechta Brachos says that Hashem has in a parallel way created within each individual a certain netiyah, a certain leaning towards a specific profession or a specific way to make a living. And he gave all different people different types of leanings. Why? Because the world needs all different types of people. Rashi discusses there what's called a bursi or a burski, which means a tanner. A tannery was a smelly place, so a type of job that nobody wanted. Compare it, for instance, to a garbage collector nowadays. So there's certain people that are cut out for that job. That's their natural tendency. And Hashem wanted it that way, and Hashem made it that way, because the world needs tanneries. And if this person fulfilled his own tachlis in this world, he's a success. The individualization of our children, the chanoich lanar al pi darkai, as opposed to making carbon copies out of everybody, that's a subject for future tape. But forget about the system in the meantime. We're talking about knowing your own child. Specifically, we're going to focus on one area. Different children react to the same behavior on the part of authority figures in different ways. I'll give you two examples that just recently happened. Today, I was in the home of a family whose child, a young boy of 14 years old, a nice, fine yeshivish boy, 2 nights ago, ran away from home. He's armed with about a few $1,000, and he left a tape for his parents, and he said, have a good life. That's it. Just ran away. I was listening to the tape this afternoon, and I'm not going to say which yeshiva he goes to, of course, or who his Rebbe is. But this particular Rebbe is known to be a very warm and understanding individual, somebody who has a very close relationship with his students. Now, on the tape, this child said that everybody in his life, except his like 1.5-year-old little brother, was making his life miserable. When he got, and he went through each, a hespit on all of the people in his life, his father and his mother and his sisters and everybody. When he got to the Rebbe, he said, this Rebbe, he mishes Zacharayin into my personal life. When I was sick and I was in my pajamas, I wasn't even dressed properly, he came to learn with me. And he's always calling me at home to find out how I'm doing. Why didn't he just leave me alone? Now, I had to rewind this tape a couple of times before I understood that this boy had something against this Rebbe. Because the way he was describing it, I thought it was a hakaras hatoiv, it was gratitude for the effort and the interest that this Rebbe put into him. But the truth is that the boy misunderstood, misinterpreted, mistook his Rebbe's interest for something other than that. He looked at it as prying, as being meddlesome, as being annoying, as not leaving the kid alone. Now, you hear kids need attention, and kids need privacy, and both are true. Where to build that wall depends on the kid. Sometimes you have to know the layout of the room, but you also have to know the size of the kid. The amount of space that you're going to give to a little midget is not the amount of space that you're going to give to Oig Melech HaBoshon. So you have to understand not only the room, the blueprint of the room, the society you're dealing with, but you have to understand the size of the child that you're dealing with. Now, I don't know if this Rebbe was able to assess if this child, I don't know if the child showed any signs that would enable anybody to read him properly. I don't know. Accidents happen, and there's certain things that, certain chances that we take, and we just try the best, and hindsight has 20/20 vision and all that. But the goal, the objective, is to try to assess the individual child as much as possible and never assume. That's what we're talking about tonight. Never assume. Maybe that's what we'll name the tape instead. That the child will react a certain way. We have a certain nature. And the Gemara says it. That we expect everybody in the world to be like us. Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Kevan da obik beituva, savar da kulei alma nami obik beit. It's amazing Gemara. It talks about the halachas that prohibit a Jew selling an item to a guy that will later be used for Avodah Zarah. And it discusses there a Jew selling to a guy a white chicken. White chickens were used for Avodah Zarah. And it says, well, you're not allowed to sell him a white chicken. And then it says also afterwards, you're not allowed to sell him a white chicken, specifically if he asks for Avodah Zarah purposes. And the Gemara asks, why does it have to say specifically if he asks? Even if he doesn't ask, you can't sell it to him. The Gemara says an amazing thing. It says that this buyer, this purchaser, this guy, is an idol worshipper. The Kevan Dehu Abik Beituva, since he's so involved in Avodah Zarah, Sovar de Kule Alma Nami Abik Bey. He thinks everybody else is involved in Avodah Zarah. This being the case, he really wants to tell you that it's for Avodah Zarah purposes, even though it's not, because he thinks you'll give it to him cheaper. So that if he says it's for Avodah Zarah purposes, there's reason to believe. There is a real doubt if he's telling the truth. Why would he lie? Because he thinks you'll give it to him cheaper, because he thinks you're an idol worshipper. Now, it doesn't matter if the Yid has a beard and payas. It doesn't matter if the Yid is a big tzaddik. Kevan de huabik beituva, that overrides everything. We have a tendency in this world to assume that other people are like us. And when we assess other people to figure out how they would react, the natural first method that we use, our first choice of methodology, first choice of strategy, is to say, well, how would I react in that situation? And it's not an altogether bad strategy. What did Hillel say was the whole Torah? Don't do to something else, somebody else, what you wouldn't want done to you. But the fact of the matter is that all this notwithstanding, we have to know that everybody in the world is different. People don't think the same way, and people don't always react to the same behavior in the same way. Here's a very good example. Now, this is an experienced Rebbe, and I'm sure that this method of bonding with his student failed, upon which this approach backfired. And Rachmanu Litzlan, it could contribute to a dinei nefashis, a life and death situation now. We have no idea where the kid is. Lisa looking, my detective is looking. You don't know? I know a story where a friend of mine from Lakewood told me something, and it really illustrates this point. He had a machloikis with somebody. They had a shaila and halacha that they disagreed on. And they decided that, well, they were going to ask Reb Moshe together to see who's right. They went to Reb Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, and they asked him the shaila, and Reb Moshe said what he said. Immediately, each one turned to the other and pointed their finger, and together they said, "You see? I told you so." I don't know what Reb Moshe said. I do know the shaila. I don't know what Reb Moshe said, but each one of them thought that Reb Moshe was agreeing with him. What is the lesson? People often hear what they want to hear. When people see something and they repeat it over to you, you should know that you're hearing that thing fourth hand. Why? Because the person's eyes saw it, the eyes told it over to the brain told it over to the mouth, and the mouth tells it over to you. It's like playing telephone. In that circuit, things tend to get distorted. And things are only as reliable as the tools that the person is dealing with. Everybody sees things in their own way. And when dealing, especially with adolescents who are so confused to begin with, because don't forget, they are half adult and half child. That's the taich of an adolescent. Now, you can go be a little more philosophical and debate whether they are a full adolescent and a full child inside, pushing and pulling on each other, or it's a new type of creature, a new type of creation that's neither adult nor child, but somewhere in between. However you want to look at it, it's not, when you're dealing with a teenager, it's not the eyes telling the brain telling the mouth telling you. There's two sets of eyes, and there's two sets of brains, and there's two sets of mouths, an adult and a child. And very often, things just go off track. If you have a train with only one track, it can get derailed sometimes. But if you have two tracks that overlap each other, unless you have a good director, somebody directing train traffic, you can easily get lost. I'll give you another example that happened recently as well. There's an example of a parent who followed the rules, and she did everything it says in the books, except the problem is that the authors of the books never met her daughter. This was a girl who was having problems with rebelliousness. And the mother wasn't sure exactly how frum the girl was. She knew that the girl had shaychus with boys, but she had no idea how far, when, where, who, or what. Just hoping for the best, preparing for the worst, reading all her books on parenting. One day, when she and her husband were out and there was nobody home except the daughter, she came home and she knew that there was a boy in the house then while she was out. She knew. The daughter admitted it. But the mother found on the couch, in front of the television, an article of clothing of the daughter between the pillows. Mother's worst fears were just realized. Now, she didn't want to make the wrong move. She called in her daughter, gave her a nice parent-to-daughter talk about the entire topic and about what's expected of her and about various different things that a child who's involved in that type of stuff should know. Okay? From that day on, girl's behavior was horrendous. She became a total rebel. One day when her mother was entertaining guests, tea or something in their house, girl came in and yelled something to the mother across the room, something from a very personal, private, and intimate nature that severely embarrassed the mother. Girl became like, had a sin, an anger, and internal hatred even for this mother. And the mother didn't understand why, because she really, really said all the right things. And she called over the girl and said, "Okay, look, what's going on? Do you know what's going on?" The girl didn't do anything. A piece of laundry or something got stuck in the couch. Nothing happened. Mother was choshed v'ksherim. And she honestly, imagine, put yourself in this daughter's position. I know that I just said that that's not a very accurate way to understand somebody else, but it's the best way we can do for now. Put yourself in this girl's position. And you know that you're not really all that frum and that you don't have all that yerushimayim. And you could have done something. And you didn't. And maybe you were pressured to. And maybe you're so proud of yourself because you didn't. And now your mother comes over to you, not out of anger, not in bitterness, but in a very nice way to be nice to you, and assumes for a dover poshut that you did. What a terrible feeling for this girl to feel. And that's what happened. But what was the mother to do? The mother should have probed and asked and even confronted the girl with what she found, and should have said, depending upon the girl, of course, I don't know what the chances are that the girl was involved and what the chances that she wasn't, but the mother should have probed and found out more before she assumed. The mother assumed. That's rule one in parenting. Never assume. There are so many camouflaged mechshoilim out there for our children, especially nowadays. Most of them you're not going to hear about, and I'll tell you why. But they're there. One of the very large Beis Yaakov-type schools recently sent a letter out. Actually, it was two letters, one after the other, to their entire student body, to the parents. Warning the parents. Cautioning would be a better word. Cautioning the parents. Watch out, the letter said, where you send your children, who your daughter's friends are. Even the best homes, you don't know what the kid is. It used to be in the olden days, it says that you can judge a child by the home that they come from, but no more, because you don't know what's there. Know what your child is doing before you let them do it. That was the gist of it. And the school added a paragraph. It said, we know that there's a danger in sending out a letter like this. And it implied that the danger was very simple. And their school is 100% right. It is a danger. And it's a terrible indictment on ourselves. And it's one of the main causes of the creation of obstacles to solving the problem of rebellious teenagers nowadays. The danger is that people will say, well, this school sending out this letter, they must have a problem. If I start solving a problem, it's Klal Yisrael's problem. And if I do something in my area for Klal Yisrael's problem, people will say, it's not Klal Yisrael's problem, it's Shapiro's problem. Must be this school has a bunch of rebellious kids from good families, and what does that say about the school? That's why most schools will not send out a letter like this. Because the school's reputation may be damaged. If a school tries to solve a problem, then people will say that this school has the problem and others don't. This is why problems are being shoved under the carpet. Not because our leaders are trying to shove them under the carpet. They have no choice. The school's reputation may be damaged. The school was, Baruch Hashem, courageous enough to do the right thing. There are so many camouflage problems out there, and people know about them. It's rare, however, that you will hear about it. Now, I can't overstate this, because people tend to think, well, if there really is a problem, why isn't anybody doing anything? Why isn't anybody talking about it? Why don't we hear about it like we hear about the Russian Jews, about the assimilation rate in America? Why is nobody doing anything or talking about it? The reason is because Chayecha Koidim. And I'm not saying it's right, I'm not saying it's wrong, I'm just stating the facts. The facts is that it's dangerous very often for our educators to discuss this, to disseminate this knowledge, because more damage than good could be done because of our unfortunate attitude and our unfortunate response to this. Having said that, can go back to the fact that there are very many hidden mechshoilim out there for our children. And yes, the school is 1,000% right. Don't assume that just because a family is a family of Bnei Torah and the father is a Baki Bashas, it means that the 15-year-old girl would make a good companion for your daughter. One has nothing, I don't want to say one has nothing to do with the other, but you can't rely on it. Can't rely on it. Because the fact is that it's not so. If you tell me in 80% of the cases it's so, and 90% of the cases it's so? Maybe. But it's not going to help your daughter if she meets the other 10%. The idea is never, ever assume. Try very hard. Don't deduce. No deductive reasoning. No cheshbining when it comes to where to build those walls for your children. First-hand knowledge is necessary in order for you to be able to know where to set the limits for your children. First-hand knowledge of the places that you're talking about, first-hand knowledge of the people we're talking about, and first-hand knowledge of your daughter or your son, him or herself. Don't assume, because our assumptions are based on fallacies. Fallacy number one is that things are the same way as they used to be. Fallacy number two is that our children react the same way we would react, or that our children are the same as the next guy. They're not. Everybody's different. So you have to know both the territory and the child that you're dealing with. And with this, we'll take questions. The minig over here is, for those of you that came from overseas and aren't aware of this, we write down questions on a piece of paper and we hand them in. Henry is not with us this evening, so I'm going to ask Chaim to collect the questions from the back, please. Question. What happens if I go to the pool hall or I listen to the rock music and I can't find anything concretely wrong with them? There are no lowlifes or loud music in the pool hall. Well, there are a number of wrong assumptions in this question to begin with. You will find things concretely wrong with many of these things. With some of them you won't. We can't make a blanket statement that there are no lowlifes or loud music in the pool hall. Sometimes yes, sometimes no, depends which pool hall or whatever. But for example, the rock music has no bad words or thoughts, at least not the one my child scares me with, shares with me. And you're not listening to the right music. It's there, trust me. However, I still don't want him to be going to these places. It is still considered quote-unquote wrong, and the yeshivas still don't allow it. Well, it's very simple. When you say it's considered wrong, by whom? The question is, what do you consider it? If you can't find anything that you or your husband, or feel free to relay this information to your personal Torah authority, your Rav or your Rosh Yeshiva, and tell him what you saw, and ask the Shaila of him. And perhaps if you can't find anything concretely wrong with it, maybe he can. Maybe he can articulate it better or notice something that you don't. And if he can't, and if you can't, then fine. Who says it is wrong? Again, it's not something that the Chafetz Chaim would necessarily do, and that itself may be something that you'd like to tell your children. But you have to know who your child is and where you're holding before you decide to employ such a statement or to use such a tactic on him. Ein hachanami. If you can't find anything wrong, and somebody who perhaps has a bit more keen eyesight than you can't find anything wrong, then maybe there's nothing wrong. As far as the yeshiva is still considering it wrong, then fine, then you have a practicality issue. It's very simple. If you want to stay in yeshiva, this is what you have to do. It's not a question of wrong or right anymore. Sometimes you have to take that stand. I'll give you a mashal. When I was in yeshiva, I don't want to say which yeshiva. Rosh yeshiva had a machloikis with another Rosh yeshiva, and other Rosh yeshiva went something that the Talmidim, we had no idea what was flying about it, and the other Rosh yeshiva or somebody from the other yeshiva was giving a shiur in Borough Park. And any boy that was caught by that shiur got into trouble. The yeshiva didn't like it. Is there anything wrong with going? Nothing that we could explain, but you got to be crazy to go. You want to get thrown out of your yeshiva? You want to get into trouble? There's a question of practicality. There's a question of wrong or right. There are a lot of different questions. Let's say your child has a teacher, and this happens all the time, that's perhaps overly sensitive about certain behaviors on the part of children. Okay? your child has to be foolish, engage in that behavior if he knows it's going to get him into trouble. And by the way, this itself is a limud, this itself is an education. That even if you're right, not everybody's going to always agree with you, and you're going to have authority figures, your boss at work. Listen, tell me if I'm wrong. Your boss is wrong more times than you are, right? Your boss is always wrong. But you got to be crazy to step on his toes. It's a limud, it's part of life. Now again, provided this is the facts. A lot of yeshivas have a lot of different policies, and a lot of parents have different policies. I'm sitting looking at the audience, and I see, obviously, very varied types of from a yidden with varied standards. And you have to decide what the standards are for your children. You have to decide, A, if you would like to, and we discussed this here once before, this is itself a question, if you would like to be at odds with what the yeshiva is teaching your child, which is not a great place to be to begin with. But should you decide that the issue is such, and should you decide it's a big if, that that's the position that you want to take and you want to be, then enoch enami, not everything is wrong just because it's considered quote-unquote wrong. There are a lot of things, by the way, that I want you to know, there are a lot of things that certain rabbanim and rosh hashivas will only do in private. Only act in private because this is what's accepted. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to grow up thinking that something's right and wrong. It's up to you, your husband, your Torah authority, your Rav, your Rosh Hashiva, to decide what's right for you. Taseh lecha Rav. Next question. What shall I tell my students about reading secular books? Doesn't say what kind of secular books. I want you to know, though, that here again, we have two shitas. Now, certain secular books, full of schmutz, and you don't have to be a fine-tuned Das Torah in order to be able to discern that. But then again, you say secular books. I want you to know that a number of years ago, there was a movement in certain yeshivas that in the English department, instead of reading secular books, they would read English Jewish books. What a wonderful idea, no? There were different shitas here, different shitas there, different people had different things. The Satmar Rebbe was the one that pulled the rug out from under this whole idea. He said that by doing such a thing, you are confusing the child. The child will no longer have a clear picture of what's Kodesh and what's Chol. It's more important for the child to know that secular studies are not Limudei Kodesh than the avoidance of those secular books. There's a story in Europe by the Kedushas Yom Tov where in the olden days, in order for a Jew to go to high school, which they used to call the gymnasium in those days, he wasn't allowed to wear a yarmulke. And the mayor of the town, or the whoever supervisor, came to the Kedushas Yom Tov and made him a deal that he'll be able to make a deal where they can have a high school where the kids will be able to sit and wear yarmulkes, and the Haredi community will be able to supply their own teachers. And the Kedushas Yom Tov said, no. Now, not all of them went, but the ones that go, let them sit and not wear yarmulkes, because then they'll understand that this is not Torah. Let them feel uncomfortable with their secular education. They have to do it, they have to do it. But let them at least know what it is. Put on a yarmulke from teacher, it becomes unclear exactly, Torah, not Torah. It's very not so poshut, the entire issue. Now, we do read secular books in our yeshivas, and certain ones are kosher and certain ones are not. And it's very simple. There's such a thing as Nivul Peh. There's such a thing as Sfarim HaChitzoinim. Take a look in the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, what the Mefarshim say. When the Mishnah says, Masech to Sanhedrin. HaKari B'Sfarim HaChitzoinim Ein Loi Chelik Li'Elam Haba. Kol Yisrael Yishlam Chelik Li'Elam Haba is starts off, it's that Mishnah. Take a look at what the Bar Tanura says over there. Take a look at what they say. And it won't be so difficult for you to find a clear-cut policy as to what type of books are permitted and what type of books are prohibited. What's your sheet on... Yeah, sure. Question. What does somebody do if their child falls in with the wrong chevra? I would like to finish this evening's lecture by Tovshin Nuntes. We speak about this a lot, and I would be doing you an injustice if I foolishly were to give you the impression that I can answer that al regalahas. Privately, I gladly talk to you about it. Question: what's your shita on exposure to current media through the Times or radio? Well, again, it depends on who you're talking to and who you're dealing with. I want you to know a psak from the Avnei Nezer, and it's one that it's a machloikus in the Achrayim. The Avnei Nezer holds like this: that if somebody's going to eat an avela, it will be a good thing to do to give him treifa instead. Because this way, you're preventing him from doing a worse Aveira. Somebody's going to do a worse Aveira. It would be a good deed on your part to induce him to do a lesser Aveira. Because this way, you're not over on Lifnaiva. Because this way, you are preventing him from doing a bigger Aveira. You didn't create a Michshel for him. You created a relative Atzola. And therefore, it depends who you're talking about. In general, as a rule, my opinion about the radio and the New York Times, I think it was quite clear tonight what it was. Again, you can't. I'll tell you. There was a memory that I say over here from my 11th grade Rebbe, who said this when I was in 11th grade, and he said that he heard it from his Rosh Hashiva, Rav Yitzchak Kutner Zatzal. He said that your children, he's talking to my Rebbe, he says, your children will be exposed to more tumah when they go to the corner grocery store to buy a Coke than your grandfather was exposed to all his life in his shtetl in Europe. Therefore, it would be futile to rely on sheltering them from the world. Rather, you must also prepare them and teach them how to deal with it. 100%. Now, it depends. Different people, because of their circumstances, their upbringing, the community they're dealing with, and the type of frumkeit that they are practicing, find it easier to use a little more sheltering and a little less teaching. Some people have to use a little more teaching and a little less sheltering. It's very simple. If a child goes, look at the different yeshivas here in Brooklyn. Now, there are no yeshiva anywhere where you won't find children who you would like your sons to stay away from. There are different places where you find more and different places where you find less. So, in certain places, you can get away with more sheltering and less teaching, and vice versa. So it depends where you are. Where I live in Far Rockaway, it's not like it is in Brooklyn. It's not perfect in Brooklyn, but it's worse in Far Rockaway in terms of that. We have exposure to all sorts of things in the very best environments that you wouldn't have here, simply because here there's so many more yidden and it could be more segregated. Everybody can find their own niche. In a place where it's more mixed, or if you have out of town, it's even more. So it depends on the circumstances. There's no one rule that I could tell you, well, do X percentage of sheltering and X percentage of preparation. You definitely need both. That's what the Rosh Hashiva said. You can't have 100%. It's not possible to be sheltered. Look, your child goes, let's say, from your house on East 10th Street to a yeshiva on Coney Island Avenue, walking down one of the most frum neighborhoods in the country, and a B6 bus passes by. And you take one look at the B6 bus, bang, there's Rav Hutner's Wort. Your grandparents in a shtetl in Europe never saw such a thing. So obviously, no matter what, unless you want to tie your child up and leave him in the house all the time, Unless you want to put him in a cocoon, you're going to have to be able to teach him, prepare him, because he will be exposed. The question is, how exposed? May assure him he won't see that bus. Really. In Flatbush he will. And there's a lot in between. And there's a lot more extreme. So it depends who you're talking to and what circumstances you are. But a parent has to be prepared for both. Have to be prepared for Melchama, and they have to be prepared for Shalom. And that's the way it is. Any more questions? If somebody claims, and I assume he's right, that if you lecture him, he'll do worse, then should you lecture him? Well, listen, we have clear halachas in the halachas of Teichacha. The only reason why you're lecturing him, or even making any attempt to correct his actions, because there's a mitzvah in the Torah of Teichacha. Now, if you're dealing with your children, you have an additional issue of chinuch. But very often, the strategies are the same for both, or very similar. And the halacha is clear that if somebody is just going to get worse because of your teichacha, you don't do it. Now, this is a general rule. Some places you'll find that you have to keep giving him lectures until he's ready to hit you, but if he's going to get worse, then there's no mitzvah to bother him. You have to... If that's the case, you have to find ways other than lecturing. And if you can't find other ways, then... Fine. If you can't find other ways, and if you don't know any other ways, and of course we're talking about a very individualized thing, then no, there is no mitzvah on you to go lecture him and thereby making him worse. Sometimes that's true, and that as a rule what you're saying is correct. However, if by lecturing him he's just going to accelerate his plunge down into the depths, then you're not doing him any favor. Have a good night, everybody. Thank you for coming.